Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you can stick around for all the conversation. You know, I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org and look for the sponsor section. There you'll find information about CUW, Concordia University Wisconsin. You know, sometimes I'll have a guest on and we hear from listeners, whether it be an email or a phone call or on Facebook. We get response from our listeners and they'd like to hear more from that guest. And that happened not too long ago. We were talking with Deaconess Ellie Coro on a program that we called Why I Chose Life. And it just so happened in radio that happens where you get to that point where you really want to hear more and the end of the program is there. So what we're going to do today is revisit that conversation with Ellie during the first portion, the first segment of the program. And then in the second half, we'll invite Ellie in and finish the story. We'll continue the story, I should say. So I hope you can stick around. Here's the conversation from just a few weeks ago with Deaconess Ellie Coro on Why I Chose Life. Deaconess Ellie Coro. She is missionary care coordinator in the LCMS Office of International Mission, a friend of mine, also a member of the congregation that I serve and a member as well. So Ellie has a great story to share today as well. Very, very dear story. Ellie, let's talk about growing up. Tell us about the life in which you grew up, the world. You haven't always been a confessing Lutheran to begin with, right?
No, not at all. Both my parents are actually retired Air Force, so I grew up Air Force brat, as we lovingly call it. So I was born in Germany, and my first time living in the States was my freshman year of high school.
Wow.
So I bounced around a lot, and so it was fun, interesting.
Germany, how long?
Germany, we bounced around back and forth between Germany and Turkey.
Wow.
Did two tours in each place, and then we rounded off in England for 6 years. And
I don't even hear the accent.
when I first moved here, that things would pop up.
Uh-huh.
And I still have little phrases that I use that people look at me like, what? And I was like, oh, that must be an Englishism. Nobody here says that.
I was at the store yesterday checking out and buying something, and the cashier said something about, well, thanks, love.
Yeah.
So is it one of those things?
And the occasional Darby instead of Derby will come out and stuff like that. It sounds odd to me to say it the American way. But yeah, most of high school I had to like force myself to say it the American way.
To do things the American way. Okay, so you grew up an Air Force kid, moving around from place to place. Your first, you lived in the U.S. then in high school?
High school, yeah. My freshman year of high school, so I was 14. And my folks retired to Vermont, in this tiny little town in Vermont, where, you know, no stoplight, nothing.
Uh-huh.
And go to this little tiny high school. Where they asked me what state England's in. And which was about the time that my folks started really attending church.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't, we weren't big churchgoers overseas. I think there were probably a lot of reasons. We were never opposed to it. It was never, I think, a conscious choice to not go to church. Although, sadly, that's often the case. It's just other things get in the way. But so we weren't a big church family before that. And then my folks started attending church. Of course, by then I'm high school, and it's like
anything your parents do is
wrong,
not cool.
Wrong. Yeah, and it's like, why would I get up Sunday morning and go to church?
So, did you go or reluctantly?
Occasionally, I was probably the Christmas and Easter kid, and a few other occasional times when they could drag me off. But no, I didn't. I didn't go terribly often. I will admit.
What was the draw for them? Was there a conversion experience, or just ties to their religious life as children?
Yeah, there wasn't a big conversion experience, I wouldn't say, but it was something they always kind of meant to get to.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in the Air Force, and I think just never got there. And now that life had slowed down, it was a nice opportunity to integrate this thing into our lives that we had never really had. So I think that mm-hmm. it was really quite as simple as that. So in going down to the little village church.
So you went to the little village church in a small town in Vermont.
Yes.
After living abroad for a long time. What were the things that well, that they learned in church, that they brought home? What were the things that you learned about this church? What was your perspective or your perception of God, His Word? What did that all look like at that time?
For me, it didn't look like a lot, honestly. sort of knew some basic Bible, mm-hmm. not tons, and couldn't have found the Gospel of John in a Bible if you're going to pay me $100 to do it. So, you know, knew bits and pieces, knew I always believed in God. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like this fervent atheist or anything like that. It was just, why do I need to go to church? And, you know, I can just kind of do other things and feel religious. I don't need to study the Bible or go to church or anything else. You know, for my folks, they really started attending to Bible study a whole lot more, and Bible study with our church, and then, you know, Bible study with friends, and, you know, because it's sort of cultivated a whole kind mm-hmm. of group of Christian friends. And so there certainly was a lot more Jesus, kind of that switch from kind of God in the abstract to Jesus, and what does Jesus look like, mm-hmm. and having Jesus informed life. But by then, you know, that was before we were Lutherans even, so there was a whole lot of kind of evangelical how to be more serious for Christ kind of mm-hmm. talk, if you know what I mean, you know, really serious discipleship and stuff like that. And you know, how do we live so that, you know, we know that everything's for Christ. Very you know, looking back on it, pretty law-centered. I didn't see it that way at the time. And my folks weren't legalistic. I don't want people to get that mm-hmm. impression. It was just very much, okay, there's a set of rules, like going to church.
Sure.
That you're supposed to follow if you're a good Christian.
So here's this set of rules. Here's this, this is what you do. And okay. So yeah. not totally legalistic, but certainly a law-oriented worldview when it comes to
when the focus of Christianity becomes being a better person, it's always going to be law-centered versus, you know, Christ's forgiveness for you, and we're sinners in need of Christ's forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was kind of trying to say, is we, you know, we didn't really have that emphasis. Mm-hmm. That didn't come until much later, when we all kind of converted en masse to Lutheranism. But that's, you know, not to give away the end of the story.
We'll get to that part of the story. Okay, so high school, you grew up with, you all started, your parents started going to church. Did you ever start going to church with them, or Bible study, or?
No, not really. No, not at all. Like I said, you know, I'd go for Christmas and Easter and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, that was about the extent of it.
So what, after high school, what came next?
So I go off to college, mm-hmm. and went to a state college in Vermont, and you know,
what did you
what
study
came next?
What did you, first of all, what did you study? What were your plans with college?
Well, I was majoring in American literature and minoring in history, thinking about becoming a teacher was sort of my plans, and that was after changing my major several times. It's like, even asking what I was majoring in isn't an easy question.
You're majoring in majors?
Yeah, I think I started off double majoring in psychology and criminal justice because I was going to be a lawyer or something. And then I got to American literature and like a minor in philosophy, which I then changed to history or something. It was ridiculous. So I was kind of on the 12-year plan.
did you change your program winter quarter of your senior year? Because that's a really good plan.
You sound like you know.
Your parents love to hear that during winter quarter of senior year. Okay, so you were majoring, thinking about being a teacher, uh-huh. and changed plans a couple of times.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of as the story goes, I start, you know, dating this guy. Mm-hmm. and, you know, it was...
It's college.
It's college. Yeah. I don't want to paint too many pictures.
Sure.
But yeah, it's college.
It's college. The worldview is
very, very secular. And this mm-hmm. is a very very liberal college. I mean, people that don't know, Vermont's a very, very liberal state. A lot of people are fighting gay marriage now. We dealt with that in like 2000 in Vermont. And so, I mean, Vermont was...
They have great cheese and maple syrup.
They have fantastic cheese, fantastic maple syrup, fantastic beer. But yeah, so all of that was kind of a foregone conclusion when I, you know, when I went off to college. Those are the things we were talking about and dealing with. All of my professors were very, very liberal and with an agenda and, you know, what you would expect from a very liberal college in a very liberal state.
It's a free world. It's a free society. It's your body.
Yeah.
Do whatever you choose.
Yeah. So yeah, I started, you know, trying to feel out that path and see what that looks like. And so, you know, as part of that, you know, it's like start dating this, you know, guy that's kind of free and not, you know, is not particularly interested in anything to do with Christianity or anything else. And yeah, so we dated for about 2 years before I finally got pregnant with my son, Andrew.
So you learned that you were pregnant. Now, are you away at school or were you at home?
I was away at school.
How did you share with your parents that, well, let's back up before we even get to sharing with your parents. What did you do when you found out you were pregnant?
I cried a lot. It's funny the way you, your mind works when you're kind of in crisis mode because it's not logical. Which is part of the real value of crisis pregnancy centers. If I can just get that plug in, is so, you know, I hadn't been feeling well for a while. And so I was at the grocery store kind of buying soup and stuff. And this voice in my head just said, you should buy a pregnancy test. And I was like, okay. And so anyway, so I take this pregnancy test and it's positive. And so, yeah, I'm pretty upset, pretty hysterical. I called my boyfriend first and he lived about an hour and a half away at the time. So he comes over and, by then I had run out to, before he got over, I had run to the store, bought two more pregnancy tests.
Just to confirm it.
And of course those were positive too. And
I think the record is around five or six. So
yeah. I figured if three were all the same, it was, And of course he was very upset, mostly with me.
So he was angry with you.
He was very angry with me. And informed me that if I didn't have an abortion, he would leave. And, you know, if I had an abortion, everything would be fine. We could just go back to normal and it would be like nothing ever happened. And if I didn't have an abortion, he wasn't going to stick around.
At that time in your life, what did abortion mean to you? What?
My family has always been pretty pro-life, even more so pro-life as we, and of course, you don't spend a lot of time talking about that as a child, but certainly, and I would have considered myself pro-life. I mean, I'm the sort of person that will pick up earthworms off the sidewalk after it rains. I'm one of those people. I let bugs outside instead of, it's kind of a problem. And, you know.
You just let all God's critters live, huh?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of letting things live. And so I certainly, I'm not somebody that would have been tagged as real abortion vulnerable. But, you know, when you're in crisis mode, and you've got your boyfriend who you think you love saying, you know, we can just fix this. It's nothing permanent. Nobody even needs to know. And of course, at this point, what's going through my mind is I've really let my parents down. And I knew I had sort of been letting, I knew I had been letting them down prior to that because I had you know, sort of deviated off this path. You know, here I am, 23, still in college and not really moving towards graduating, just sort of this perpetual student thing. And, you know, involved in a lot of things that you wouldn't want to write home about. And so I knew I'd been letting them down, but this was like, in my mind, like the final, the final straw. And, you know, how do you come back from that? You know, a lot of people have periods in college where they kind of go off the reservation and then kind of get their act together and come back.
So the wild oats and then come back.
But, you know, when you're pregnant, there's no way.
There's something substantial
to fix
here.
That. you know, once they know the cat's out of the bag, and I knew that once I told my parents, our relationship would never be the same again. And so, you know, so I did put off telling them. I called my best friend. Bear in mind, I'm in Vermont. She's in Virginia. And I'm going to cry now.
That's okay.
So she's in Virginia. And I tell her on the phone. And she's like, okay, hold on, I'll be up there. And she gets in her car and drives from Virginia to Vermont.
Wow. It's a long drive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and she was a full-time teacher. I mean, she had like a job and everything else. So she took some sick time. She called out sick and she gets in her car. I mean, I'm sure she had other plans that week. And, you know, instead of just, you know, consoling me on the phone, which any normal person would have done. So, you know, she was there with me. And this was a weekend, and so it's Monday morning, and I wanted to go to the local pregnancy center, CareNet, and talk to them. But they were actually closed. They're closed every Monday, that one is, which is interesting. And in my brain, it made sense that even though I didn't want an abortion, that Planned Parenthood does abortions. And so they would have doctors there. And I didn't have insurance or anything else. I was like, well, I could go see a doctor and they could confirm for me the pregnancy and maybe tell me how far along I am and kind of I can start sort of making plans with something more concrete than a home pregnancy test. Because I didn't know where to start. And so I go to Planned Parenthood and there was no doctor, first of all. There was a counselor, quote unquote. And she gave me a home pregnancy test, the same one that I had taken, which they charged me $75 for. And, because they charged me for that and for the, counseling, which was a stack of pamphlets about everything a baby needs, which is money, mom with a good job, a husband or stable boyfriend. And of course, these are all things that I don't have.
Sure. None of which you
none
possess.
Of, none
time,
of which
yeah.
I possess. And so a whole big other stack of pamphlets on abortion, how easy it is. And even the name of a doctor who would do late term abortions if I couldn't make up my mind or if I changed my mind later, I'd do that. And so, you know, no big rush, but certainly a lot of pressure. And I think there was one little pamphlet on adoption, but with no information on where to go for adoption. If you were interested in pursuing adoption, it was pretty clear what the choice was that I was supposed to make. And so even though I walked in not particularly abortion-minded, you know, still scared, still, how am I going to tell my parents what I'm going to do?
You were thinking you wanted to have a plan?
Yeah.
You wanted to show your parents, I'm doing something responsible. I messed up, but I'm doing something responsible.
Yeah, or I think I wanted everything to slow down a little bit. And you know, just stop a minute. Let me think. Let me figure it out. And then once I walked out of there, it seemed, you know, completely hopeless. you know, how am I going to get any kind of job that I can support a baby?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't stay in my apartment. And, you know, all these practical things, because I had this nice little apartment and it's like, well, I can't stay in my apartment with a baby. And, oh, you know, I've got this gas stove in the middle of the hallway. And I can't have a baby with a gas stove in the middle of my hallway. I mean, which sounds ludicrous, but it's just
all the questions. That, yeah,
it's just crisis thinking. And,
sure.
You know, it's very emotional as opposed to being very rational. And yeah. So, you know, I'm talking to my best friend as we're coming out of Planned Parenthood, and she said, you know, I really think you just need to tell your parents. I said, I'll go with you. You know, we'll just drive to the house, let them know we're coming in for dinner, and we'll just sit down and tell your parents. And, you know, and of course, by then, the boyfriend's gone.
Look,
I mean, this is 2 days, and he's gone.
Hmm.
And so I called the house that night and said, you know, I'm going to, Arenda's in town, which is my friend's name, and we wanted to come in for dinner. That'd be okay.
On a Monday.
Everything's fine.
Was on a Monday?
I think this is on a Monday, yeah. And so I think, you know, my parents aren't stupid. They knew something was up, but they didn't ask me too many questions on the phone. Kind of let it be, and like, oh, okay, what can we fix? And, you know, my mom is the consummate hostess, and so I think she probably fixed something fabulous. So we come home, and...
And you didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah, and so, you know, and so I remember we sat out on their sun porch, and, you know, right away they're like, okay, you know, something's up. What's going on? And so I told them that I was pregnant, and, you know, first thing my mom did was hug me. And... you know, I was expecting
judgment.
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting more kind of the knee jerk anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's thrown her life away. Everything else. And it was none of that, at least not that they expressed to me. They were very kind and very forgiving. And, you know, we sat down and like we worked out a plan, and it was never a question that, you know, I was going to have an abortion or even give him up for adoption. It was like, no, we're going to do this, and we're a family, and, you know, families go through good times, families go through bad times, and sometimes it's even hard to recognize what the mm-hmm. good times are. And the hard times, because things that, you know, as I've learned, things that look like terrible trials at first and turn into, you know, your greatest sources of joy and blessing. And of course, that's not always true. But yeah, so I ended up taking a break from college and moving in with them and lived with them for a couple of years, which enabled me to be with my mm-hmm. son while he was a baby. You know, I wasn't trying to put him in daycare or leave him with sitters or whatever else to try and work, because I was able to just be mom.
Mm.
And it was an enormous sacrifice on their part. And yeah.
And what I'm sure would not only a gift to you so that you could have that time to be with him, but to have more people in his life as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned that the father, your boyfriend.
Gone.
Totally yeah. cut off.
Yeah.
He didn't want to have any connection whatsoever.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he's got grandpa.
So now, yeah, it's exactly. It's grandpa and grammy. Grandpa who actually isn't grandpa. He's actually Bubba.
Bubba.
when you're a child living in Turkey, Turkish, Bubba is Turkish for father. So my dad has always been Bubba to me. He's never been dad.
Yeah.
And Andrew picked that up for me. So he's Bubba to Andrew as well, which is kind of funny. Mm. And so, yeah, so then he's got his grandmother there every day. He's got his grandfather there every day.
When did you, we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that we share this important part of the story as well. When did you really learn about forgiveness? When When did you learn about grace and forgiveness? When did those things, what was that pivotal moment for your family?
Was for the way my parents received me. Mm. I mean, I lived the prodigal son. And, you know, when your father, you know, lifts up his robes and comes running to you, as the father does in the parable, and just joy at having what was lost back mm-hmm. home and seeing that, it clicked. And, mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, of course my interest in church grew exponentially, and, you know, living in that grace and mercy and forgiveness that of course they embodied as my parents. And, it certainly made going to church in a lot of ways a piece of cake. And they were always very, very kind of protective of me, because of course you get people in the church that aren't quite as kind, mm-hmm. But they were always, you know, she chose life. And if we're going to be pro-life, it's not just stopping girls from having abortions, it's supporting single moms who live with that hard choice.
Mm-hmm. And I've had the chance to meet your parents, great folks, and they really do stand by those words. And now we have this precious Joy, who just celebrated confirmation this weekend.
Yes.
What a beautiful story. Ellie, thank you so much for being my guest. I know there's so much more to it. I wish we had more time to share it.
Thank
Deaconess
you.
Ellie Coro, Missionary Care Coordinator, LCMS Office of International Mission. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks a lot.
Are you one of the 1.32 billion Facebook users? More importantly, do you follow Worldwide KFUO on Facebook? When you follow KFUO, you'll learn about upcoming programs and guests. You'll see pictures of the studio and live KFUO events. Go to Facebook.com/KFUO Radio and click the like button. Then share us with your friends and follow along throughout the day. Liking KFUO Radio on Facebook will help you share the faith with your friends and keeps you up to date on what's going on at Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The House of Representatives recently passed the Paying Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. This stops all abortions after 5 months of pregnancy because science has clearly demonstrated the unborn baby feels the brutal abortion at this stage. As you can expect, Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, spoke out. Keep in mind, her organization is the largest chain of abortion mills in the nation and is the most aggressive at lobbying for extreme pro-abortion laws. Ms. Richards said stopping abortion at 5 months into pregnancy lacked compassion. Think about that. We're talking about babies who've survived when born at this age in the womb. What kind of organizations and people support such heinous and brutal acts? Planned Parenthood. And we must stop funding them with your tax dollars.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO is the most trusted place for sacred music of the church every night. Weeknights after evening prayer, you can hear sacred music on KFUO in St. Louis, streaming online at kfuo.org. Our online stream is in high-quality stereo, so you can hear the difference wherever you listen, on your computer or Wi-Fi radio, and on your smartphone. We're Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for 90 years.
Live Tuesday on Issues Etc., we'll have Pastor Ted Giese review Sunday night's episode of the TV series AD The Bible Continues. We'll look forward to Sunday morning talking with Dr. Carl Fakencher about the Trinity, and we'll have Pastor Brian Wolfmiller respond to an evangelical proof text.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
The Lutheran Study Bible you know and love is now available in a compact paperback edition. Weighing in at a slim 2.1 pounds, the newest edition is a compact powerhouse, the same great content of the original Lutheran Study Bible. It's a perfect fit for gift-giving, outreach, youth ministry, and more. The Lutheran Study Bible paperback edition, available at cph.org, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, cph.org.
Hi, my name is Julie. I'm from Hamel, Illinois. I am a KFUO day sponsor because I value KFUO and all it provides for me on a daily basis. Programs like morning prayer help teach me and strengthen my faith each day. Whether I'm at my desk or in my car or in the kitchen, I am always able to hear the gospel preached on my radio, which I really need. I also like being a day sponsor because I'm able to dedicate a day to my father for his birthday, and he likes to get that for his present. It's a way for me to show my parents that I'm grateful to them for having me baptized, and I hope this encourages listeners to support KFUO, especially during this special anniversary celebration, and so we can keep KFUO going another 90 years. Thank you.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We are continuing the conversation. I hope you enjoyed the revisit of the conversation with Deaconess Ellie Coro, Why I Chose Life. And so today, we'll continue that conversation now live in studio with Deaconess Ellie Coro. Ellie, thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to come back and talk with us about this important topic, life and why you chose life. This is one of the... Your story is not only a beautiful story of choosing life, but also the story that we need to hear. It's very easy to say, I'm pro-life, I support pro-life issues and matters. Your story, though, brings to reality how we need to follow through when we say I'm pro-life. What does it mean to be pro-life? What are the actions that we need to follow through in for the rest of us in supporting, we'll get back to your story. I've got all these things going on in my head and I can't articulate it. That's really bad when you work in radio, when you can't articulate what you want to say.
Oh shoot, we're in trouble if the host can't articulate it. And I know I'm probably going to get sidetracked too.
But going back, you know, revisiting your story, we just had a chance to hear that again. The story that it went through those college years, and there were certainly some ups and downs of the college years, and faith was always a part of your life. The church was a part of your life, but it was quite often very distant in the back, and especially in those early years of college.
Uh-huh.
And that's when you were in a relationship and a child comes into the picture. As we just heard a little bit ago, the father of this child said, have an abortion, everything will go, and then we'll go on
everything
just fine.
Will
everything
away.
Will be normal. Yep. Yeah, everything will go away. And you couldn't do that. You mm-hmm. couldn't bring yourself to do that. So then you face your family, along with the support of a dear friend, and share with them the news that you're expecting a child, and yet I'm sure somewhat fearful when you approach them with this, with this news, and yet they were very loving and compassionate when you shared that with them.
Yeah. I heard somebody say a while ago, and I actually kind of liked it, is that our children, because they're rebellious sinners, will run away from their parents all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're running away from the law, they'll never come back. If they're running from the gospel, they'll come back. And, you know, that the gospel will draw them back, as mm-hmm. the gospel does. And so I, you know, having that grace, mercy, and forgiveness just opened up this whole new world. This whole new way of seeing my faith, mm-hmm. seeing my relationship with my neighbors, and seeing what Christ had done for me, in reconciling all of these things that I thought were irreconcilable,
mm-hmm.
and it really was a marvelous period in my life, which has really shaped a lot of how I've viewed everything else mm-hmm. having to do with my Christianity. I think probably was a significant driving force in actually bringing me from evangelicalism into Lutheranism was this, you know, as one of my professors said, my nose for the gospel. is seeing where that grace and that mercy and that forgiveness is and where it's not. Because we couch a lot of things in law that sound sort of gospel-y. It's like, but, you know, kind of finally working that out and kind of dealing with scripture and, you know, finally having an appetite for God's word and, you know, trotting off to Bible study with my folks and everything. And at the time, my folks were going to an Assemblies of God church. And so it's been quite a journey even on that front, just the theological front and figuring out what, you know, what this forgiveness means and how is that a reality for my life? Is it just an eschatological reality that my sins are in an abstract sense kind of forgiven, or does it affect the way we live in community with each other? How does it affect the way we live with our neighbors?
What does the cross mean, not only for eternal life, for life after this world?
Yeah.
What does it mean for life in this world? And so what I hear you saying is that the cross, the forgiveness granted, you know, that is granted to you in Christ Jesus through his death on the cross shapes your daily life. It shapes those relationships with people around you. Particularly, we're looking at here that relationship with your parents with you, and that forgiveness, that compassion that they had, mercy that they had on you at a time when you thought, oh, this is just going to be awful.
Yeah, and it's not like my parents had read a textbook about how to forgive your wayward child and how to love your wayward
child. That
sounds
like a good book, though.
And they're, you know, following the five steps to having a successful relationship with your wayward child. And so, you know, this is step three. You know, your kid comes home pregnant, and well, what do? Well, you hug them and you love them and forgive them. No, they were just living that grace and that mercy that they had received that was natural to them. And I mean, that's fruit of the spirit kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, often I think, you know, we talk about, it's funny because several years ago, Barack Obama had made that statement that he didn't want his daughters punished with a baby. And, you know, if they should get pregnant, and, you know, was arguing in favor of abortion, people rightly got very, very upset with it, that statement. But I think we still have this, especially fathers of daughters, I think have this idea in their mind that's the worst thing that can possibly happen is my daughter gets pregnant. And and it's not. I mean, there's way worse things that can happen. And the funny thing is, you know, I often say gospel land is backwards land. Jesus is really in the business of taking what was last and making it first and taking what was weak and making it strong. And that's, you know, taking what is foolishness and making it wisdom. I mean, that's that life under the cross. So, you know, having this thing that, you know, to the world looks like the worst possible thing that can happen. Okay, she's ruined her life. Nothing will ever be the same. And it becomes just the greatest thing. I mean, it's, yes, there's hardship. And yes, there's things I wish I could do differently. That's always the case with sin. And it's not an encouragement that, you know, people should go out and follow my example at all, but it's just how this redemption works in our real lives, in our vocations, that as forgiven sinners, all things are made new. And even this, you know, opportunity to have this wonderful child is, you know, and he's a pretty cool kid.
He is. Well, let's talk about from where things went from there. Your parents were very gracious and willing to support you through this. They too are pro-life, and you know, they're very life affirming and saw this child as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Even you know, in spite of our own sin, saw this child as a gift.
Yeah, and it's funny because I spent couple of years living with my parents. I moved back in with my parents, and that apartment that had the heater in the hallway that I was talking about in the earlier segment, I moved out of that apartment and moved in with my parents and lived with them for a couple of years, which enabled me to be home and, you know, care for Andrew as I needed to, and which was a wonderful, wonderful blessing. And my parents even made the comment many times that it was a great gift to them to be able to see their grandson all the time and have that relationship with him. And they had all kinds of friends that had grandchildren that they never saw.
Sure.
Because they lived far away, or, you know, maybe their relationship was strained with their children, or various reasons. And so, you know, to be able to, you know, on a daily basis, mm-hmm. spend time with their grandson. And you know, it doesn't mean it was perfect all the time. Certainly.
We don't want to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
But how were they received? How were you received by their friends, by members of their congregation, you know, by their pastors? How did that go?
Actually, people were overwhelmingly very, very kind. Very, very kind. Very generous. Very, very gracious. And there was a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, even in the Assemblies of God church that I was in, there was a lot of support there. And as we changed churches and everything, which is probably a different story. But,
that's three more segments.
And it's just, yeah, there was quite a bit of support. But of course, you know, there's kind of, the single mom is, I think, too often and this isn't a criticism even, it's just an observation, is often the easy outcast to point to show your mercy. Is I see this a lot, you know, it's like, well, you know, go out and have mercy on the single mom and care for the single mom, which is wonderful. And it's really easy when we're talking about a pregnant single mom. Or we're talking about a single mom with a newborn. Those needs are really fairly simple. And doesn't mean that people don't give and support that without great sacrifice. But, you know, it's easy to care for the mom with the cute baby. You know, it gets a little more messy when, well, I thought she was going to get married and, you know, now she's still not married and she is still a single mom and her kid is like not a cute baby anymore.
He's a screaming toddler.
Yeah. Or whatever. And it gets a little more messy, I think, and a little more challenging. But yeah, I mean, I was in the pro-life community that was fairly largely understanding. Doesn't mean there weren't unkind comments, mm-hmm. but or insensitive comments, but really, I don't have any reason to complain about that.
And I think, and this is merely my opinion, but two wrongs don't make a right. Quite often, we think that if she's an unwed mother, that she should get married. But if it's a situation or circumstances where it's just not healthy,
mm-hmm.
Two wrongs don't make a right. If the father is potentially is abusive or you know, just unstable, unfit,
yeah.
That doesn't mean that marriage here is going to fix that.
As I say, the horses have already left the barn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no point closing the barn doors after the horses have already left,
mm-hmm.
and the nature of this sort of sin is that, you know, you are having, you know, you are sinning with somebody that isn't necessarily marriage material, you know, to be quite blunt. And that's the way that lifestyle and those sorts of choices often run. And so you don't fix that by then saying, okay, we'll get married. You don't suddenly become marriageable material. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I mean,
and especially if that person isn't also in that same state of repentance.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, if that don't be unequally yoked still applies.
Yeah, and that's one place where, you know, there were disagreements with, you know, the church I was at initially. It was at first, you know, very supportive and everything else, and then it was like, well, okay, now it's time for you guys to get married. You need to, you know, and like, well, no. You know, I had sort of gone through this thought process and kind of this realization that, well, wait a minute, you left and, you know, you left at a critical time and, this isn't going to be fixed, and this isn't going to get better by us being married. And so, you know, and the pastor at the time just couldn't understand that, couldn't wrap his brain around that.
And granted, this is a tough thing for no matter what perspective you're coming from this or what point of view you're coming from. This is a tough thing, I'm sure, for everyone to work through. And it's not like it's just clearly spelled out. This is what you do in this situation. There isn't that 5 steps to how to forgive your wayward child book.
Well, exactly. And that's part of what makes it so difficult is, you know, I think when you're the single mom with the baby, and, you know, I have to say, even after I had my son, I didn't picture, you know, here we are almost 11 years down the road. I didn't picture still being a single mom. You know, I figured I'd get married and, you know, everything would be fine and we'd be good. And, you know, I'd have my family anyway. And I didn't really kind of plan raising a child by myself. So it's not like I set out with that goal in mind. And it's not like I said, well, you know what? I don't need a man. I think that's one of the myths here is I think people think that single moms have like somehow consciously elected to excise men from their lives and are making this declarative statement, I don't need a man to raise a baby. And yeah, okay, there's some Hollywood elites that go off and do that. I recognize that. But in terms of, you know, like real people, like normal people, nobody knows how important fathers and husbands are like a single mom because we don't have it.
Now, in your circumstance, you know, grandpa has been...
Yeah.
I think probably a huge help.
Yeah, huge father figure, for lack of a better word. And I mean, he and my dad and my son they're tight and they're buddies and, you know.
And they get some time together this week, right?
Yeah. I tried to take Andrew to get his hair cut this week and Andrew informed me that no, that was what he and Bubba were going to do together. So they're taking my dad's convertible to go a haircut and then go to Sonic and get milkshakes together because, you know, and blasting the Beach Boys while they do it.
But that, I think, is evidence of the meaningful relationship he has with his grandfather.
Yeah, exactly.
And how important that is for him to have that relationship, how valuable that is to him, that he enjoys spending time with his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that he has regular open communication with his grandfather.
Oh, yeah. So, and you know, and I've had some challenges and some road bumps where it was like, it was very times where it's become very apparent where I need a man to handle this. This is, you know, part of an issue that Andrew's having growing up and he needs to talk to a guy. He doesn't want to, you don't want to talk to your mom about this. And I mean, and there was one particular time my dad hopped on a plane and flew in and was like, okay, you know, I'll spend the week with you guys and spend some time with Andrew. It sounds like Andrew needs some guy time. And that's fine. We'll do that. We'll do guy time. And it was great. It was exactly what he needed.
And thanks be to God that your father is available and can do that.
Yeah.
It's so accessible.
And it's not a substitute for a dad, but it's what the Lord has given. Mm-hmm. It's what the Lord's given me to work with. And, you know, I'll take that with gratitude.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to come back to this, you know, when we say we're pro-life, you know, Christians, many Christians say they're pro-life or life-affirming, but we have to have action behind that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, if we say that, yes, it stems from, you know, our God's word that God wants us to respect all human life and see all human life as gift from him. But we also have to be able to support a woman who makes that choice to bring that child to term.
And
not go down that path of destruction and abortion. We have to be able to stand up and say, you know, we're willing to support either the single mom or you know, support with adoption, whatever life affirming action that may be.
We
can't just say we're pro-life, now go take care of your own problem.
I think some of that is too, there is a stigma attached to it. I mean, imagine you walk into church every Sunday and you have a sign around your neck that details your most grievous sin. And everybody gets to read that, and everybody gets to see that, and everybody gets to kind of fill in the gaps mm-hmm. and figure out what sort of person you are. And so when we, and I think, you know, this is a particular sin that, you know, especially as we see so many attacks on the family, you know, we've become very focused on sure. how to care for families. And sometimes support for the single mom looks like it flies in the face of those values. And it really, it doesn't. I mean, being kind and generous to a single mom doesn't tell anybody, hey, it's okay to be a single mom and it's okay to have a child out of wedlock. I don't think anybody could ever get that message from that. No, but I've had discussions with, you know, even pastors about, you know, words they use to refer to children born out of wedlock, you know, words that I can't say on a family radio station. But and it's like, okay, that may be a technically true word, but, you know, when you're using those kinds of words, you're further stigmatizing it. And so that woman that's in the crisis pregnancy, like I was, is back to thinking this is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to me. Mm-hmm. And so I will do anything I can to try and not live that life, to be that scarlet woman, you know? And I mean, I had somebody tell me recently that I sinned against Andrew by raising him as opposed to giving him up for adoption because, you know, I denied him a family of a mother and a father. And it's like, well, we have this sort of rhetoric out there, and very unashamedly. I mean, these are, you know, public places that people have said these things. And it's like, if this is our level of thinking, then really we haven't gotten past being pro-life is just about, well, don't kill your baby. You know, God has given me this child. He is a blessing to me. Mm-hmm. And what do I need in help and support? Sometimes it's just compassion and understanding. I mean, there's sure. things other people take for granted that I just can't have mm-hmm. in my life, just because I don't have time. I'm the only adult.
Well, and that was one of my questions. What are some of the challenges that you face being a single mom? I know that the list could be quite lengthy, but you know, some of the challenges that you face as a single mom who made that bold choice to choose to carry this child to term, not only carry this child to term, but also to raise this child on your own with support from from grandma and grandpa, but and there might have been others along the way. But what are some of the challenges that one faces with just about a minute or less?
Well, there a lot of them are logistical struggles when you're the only adult.
Yeah,
I'm the only
one.
Don't
live on the third floor.
Yeah, I'm the only one that can do a lot of these things. You know, as he's gotten older, he's been given more chores and more responsibility. And so that's the thing, is you end up raising a child that's a little more independent than a lot of other kids. But so if I don't do it, it doesn't get done. So that means I have to do all the things that go into running a household plus working full time. And so, you know, it means usually I get home at the end of the day, having been at work all day, and I'm, you know, vacuuming and doing laundry, dishes and laundry and everything else. And if I lose a day in there, I start falling very, very quickly behind. And, you know, there isn't a fallback. If he's sick, I'm the one that has to stay home.
Right. Yeah.
There's little flexibility, but oh well.
But it is obvious that God has provided for all your yes. needs and continuously does. What a blessing, what a gift this Thanks. Child is, and your story. I know we're out of time again.
It's
the story that keeps going on. Ellie, thank you so much for your willingness
you so
to
much.
Share your story
you.
And for sharing why you chose life. Thanks for being our guest today
thank
on Faith
you.
And Family.
Bye.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.